Coming up on Fronteras, a little known stretch of desert in southern New Mexico is the site of a proposed national monument.
It seems every time we come, we find either a new petroglyph or a new ceramic type or a cool new arrowhead.
But some fear its proximity to the border may invite illegal traffic. A developer in Arizona embarks on an urban renewal project in a poor Phoenix barrio. But how will this impact its rich Latino past?
There's really not an embracing of the Mexican-American culture. It's more the cowboy stuff, you know, the old West stuff.
A university research team in Texas was one of six teams selected by the FAA to begin testing drones. All of these stories coming up, but first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations. I'm Crystal Chavez. A university research team in Texas was one of six teams selected by the FAA recently to begin testing unmanned aerial vehicles, otherwise known as drones. The main focus of the testing is to work out safety and communication issues, and huge chunks of Texas have been designated as potential testing sites. But some parts of the state are not keen on the idea. We have a two-part story on Texas drones, beginning with Joey Palacios, who joined other reporters for a UAV demonstration near Corpus Christi.
It's a clear, sunny day in Kennedy County, Texas. The site where Texas A&M Corpus Christi tests its unmanned aerial vehicles, called an RS-16, is on a ranch so large it's a 45-minute drive from the ranch gate to the test site. The testing field is mostly green except for a white tent, a few generators, and a trailer whose roof bristles with satellite dishes and antennas. John Hugley is the mission commander and a UAV booster.
This is the equivalent of going from, you know, propellers to jets. So this is the next big thing in aviation.
The media is here to see the RS-16 take off. After 2 hours of prep, this orange and gray plane, 10 times the size of a typical model airplane, is launched into the air via slingshot. It's monitored and controlled by at least two people in the trailer. Matt McCurdy is the internal pilot. He can change its route simply by clicking a mouse.
What you see here is the data coming down from the aircraft, and this allows me to control the aircraft, tell it where it needs to go, where it needs, you know, how high it should fly, and what airspeed it should be flying at.
The craft can go up to 15 miles away, and its video, taken from a camera on its tail, is projected back to the trailer. It returns after about an hour and a half. Hugley calls it a successful mission.
It's something we really need to get into the market as soon as we can, but we need to do it as safe as possible. And that's the whole purpose of why we're doing the way we are.
Analysts believe industry will bring economic benefits to Texas and five other states where testing has been approved. Mike Blades is an aerospace and defense analyst with Frost Sullivan. He says the testing sites could bring 1,000 jobs.
The economic benefit really is going to be the buildup around getting there, getting back, everything that supports, you know, kind of an infrastructure of what customers are going to need when they come to your test sites.
As many as 11 test ranges, encompassing a huge amount of Texas airspace, are possible test sites. But there remains a lot of kinks to work out, even before the testing is expanded across the state. In Kennedy County, I'm Joey Palacios.
This is Lauren Madelon at the airport in Alpine, West Texas, where a private pilot is taking off, one of many drawn to this area's wide-open skies, no commercial air traffic, bounded by the Rio Grande Valley and the high desert. There's not a lot of enthusiasm here for drones. Two counties targeted by Texas A&M have recently banned drone testing. The city of Alpine, which owns the airport, did the same. Back on the ground, pilot Steve Posner.
The airspace they want to use for flying drones is uncontrolled. In other words, there's no radar services, there's no air traffic separation at lower altitudes in this area, and it's a very dangerous situation for mid-air collisions.
The nearest air traffic control is in Albuquerque, New Mexico, 490 miles away, and the two counties wonder about the promise of economic benefit. Lawmakers here say two drivers of the region's economy, ranching and tourism, depend on airspace tranquility. Tom Williams is a Brewster County commissioner.
And there is definitely the uncertainty about the safety of that type of program. These things go up and some of them come down where they're not supposed to.
A recent case in point, off the California coast, mid-afternoon, November. Two sailors were burned when a drone crashed into their Navy cruiser. 5 days before, another military drone crashed into Lake Ontario in central New York State.
What Congress was directing us to do was to...
That's FAA Chief Michael Huerta at a Senate committee Wednesday. Congress has ordered the FAA to introduce commercial drones into U.S. airspace by the end of next year. Senators pressured Huerta on another big issue in Texas and elsewhere, privacy.
We would welcome the opportunity to work with our federal partners on a way forward.
Meaning there is no policy on privacy yet. One Texas pilot says, "We're not Luddites. We know drones are inevitable. But not here," he says, "before safety and privacy are addressed." I'm Lorne Madelon in Alpine, Texas.
The San Diego and Tijuana border remains one of the most heavily trafficked international crossings in the world. And that traffic has a dark side. Humans, especially girls, being bought, sold, and forced into labor or sex. A recent high-profile case in San Diego netted dozens of arrests for sex trafficking. But there are few resources for victims on the Mexican side of the border. A resident of San Diego has opened a shelter in Tijuana for victimized girls. Brooke Binkowski reports it's one of only two in all of Mexico.
On a sunny day in a big walled-off house in an upscale part of Tijuana, some young girls are learning the piano. In another room, 19-year-old Zuria is telling her story. She was forced into prostitution by a friend who'd asked her for help, she says. Zuria isn't her real name, but it's what she calls herself to protect her identity now that she's here. Here is La Casa del Jardín, or the Garden House. It's a safe house for young women who have been coerced or sold into prostitution, a combination group home and school. The girls get language and math classes along with music, art, and therapy. Alma Tucker opened La Casa del Jardín last June.
If those girls are not treated right, sometimes they can turn to be victimizers. Then it's one circle. Then we as a community, as authorities, we need to stop that circle. We need to give them the opportunity to heal.
Tucker started her career working at the Mexican consulate in San Diego. Because she's bilingual, she did a lot of work with migrants. As her career progressed, she realized the enormity of the problem of trafficking. After leaving the consul, she started the International Network of Hearts in 2010 to raise money and awareness to help trafficked victims. Last year, she opened La Casa del Jardín. She now goes back and forth across the border almost daily to meet with the girls and her handpicked employees. The girls are sent to the house after they're rescued by authorities in the United States and Mexico. Brenda Ruacho de Vega is the wife of the Baja California governor and president of Baja's Patronato DIF, the state social services agency. She toured the Tijuana Safe House, giving out hugs and kisses and talking with the girls about their lives. She says binational efforts, like this one, are what's needed most to end trafficking and slavery, because no one country can deal with it alone. It has to be a joint effort, she says. Part of the money that keeps La Casa del Jardín open comes from San Diego County. Rudy Ramirez is a city council member in Chula Vista, a few miles north of the international border. He's championing Tucker's cause.
I mean, it happens in lots of ways where, you know, in some cases where because of issues in the home, these young ladies will leave their home and as a result be taken in by somebody who just wants to exploit them, basically, and enslave them. And they do, you know, in sex trade or in other work, you know, domestic work.
Ramirez says the scope of human trafficking can be difficult to grasp.
It's not the sort of thing that you expect happens anymore, right? Or you think this happens somewhere else, some other continent somewhere. And so it is surprising to hear that it happens here.
Back in Tijuana, Alma Tucker says it's most crucial to give the girls the tools they need to reintegrate into society.
For those girls, they don't choose what they go through. They are victims and they need to be rescued. All those girls that are there, and all those girls that are already victimized, they deserve better life.
19-year-old Zuria, who was forced into prostitution, says she believes her experiences have made her stronger as long as she can help others.
Esto que me pasó me hace como que más fuerte.
Zuria says someday she might like to work in law enforcement, specializing in trafficking cases. In Tijuana, I'm Brooke Binkowski.
This month marks the 100th anniversary of Mexican revolutionary leader Pancho Villa's victory at the Battle of Ojinaga, a battle that changed the course of Mexican history. Iconic images of Villa that resonate even today were taken at that battle. Villa routed Mexican federal troops there and went on to establish some of the basic constructs of modern Mexico, such as agrarian reform and compulsory education. Fronteras correspondent Lorne Madelon of Marfa Public Radio reports from Ojinaga, Chihuahua.
Mexico's military band signaled the start of a day dedicated to recalling a controversial man. In death, he remains a symbol of hope for many, for a Mexico still longing to put his democratic ideals into practice. The governor of Chihuahua State, Cesar Duarte.
Es un ejemplo de un ciudadano valiente que luchó por la libertad y la democracia de México.
Villa was a brave citizen who fought for liberty and democracy, he says. Ojinaga and Pancho Villa are linked forever by photographs taken by an American film company that have come to define both Pancho Villa and the Mexican Revolution. In 1913, Villa, needing cash to finance his war, signed a deal with the Mutual Film Company to document his battles. Engagements were rescheduled or restaged for the cameras. To honor his memory, the Chihuahua State Legislature convened Friday in Ojinaga, a stone's throw from Presidio, Texas, where the troops that Villa routed sought refuge after the battle. Ojinaga Mayor Miguel Antonio Carreon Rojana says the celebration and the politicians' visits are focusing the eyes of all of Mexico on his border town.
It's very important to us, too. The governor be here and the Congress. It's the first time in the life of our town.
On the street, many people seem to relish the attention. A private citizen, Hector Rodriguez, went further, saying the town's long been ignored by the powers that be in Mexico.
I think it's just good for the city because a lot of people from different parts of the Chihuahua coming here and see what's going on, what the real the city is, you know.
Others were on the street remembering a man who in death has become a national hero. Villa was assassinated in 1923. Romina Gandera drove several hours to be here from Chihuahua City.
Hay mucha corrupción, la gente lo sabe, pero todos buscan a alguien que los lidere.
There's a lot of corruption and everyone knows it, she says. We're all looking for someone to lead us, the way Villa did. This is Gandera's friend, Roberto Salcero.
It's like where our story begins. So we born from there, so we have to pass that information to the next generations.
Like many historical figures, Pancho Villa was not and is not universally loved. He was barbaric in the way he killed his prisoners of war, and he had a less than stellar relationship with the women in his life. Nevertheless, his rout of federal Mexican troops and his defiance of the superpower to the north mark his place and this town's place in Mexican history. I'm Lorne Madelon in Ojinaga, Chihuahua.
There's still more Fronteras coming up. A developer in Arizona embarks on an urban renewal project in a poor Phoenix barrio. But will it wash out its rich Latino past?
There's really not an embracing of the Mexican-American culture. It's more the cowboy stuff, you know, the old West stuff.
Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. There's a movement afoot to bring new money into urban areas all over the country. And surprisingly, Phoenix, Arizona is part of that movement. The city has long been famous for its suburban sprawl. But now plans are moving ahead to link high-rise downtown with a neighboring Latino barrio that wealthy developers have ignored for the better part of 100 years. From the Fronteras desk, Peter O'Dowd reports.
There are poor industrial neighborhoods in every big city. I'm standing in one of them with developer Feliciano Vera. With a good arm, you could probably pick up this empty beer bottle that we just found on the 14 acres of dirt he's buying.
Bottle of Cobra.
Give it a good chuck and clear the railroad tracks that separate Grant Park from the polished office buildings of downtown Phoenix. Vera plans to bridge this divide between rich and poor.
This is a condition that's existed that predates statehood.
For our community to go over the railroad tracks and for the downtown people to come on this side of the railroad tracks, it's like going to China.
I asked Eva Olivas to join us at the site of Vera's proposed development. She leads a group that works to improve local neighborhoods. In Grant Park, streetlights, trees, and sidewalks are scarce. Decades of industrial use have polluted the soil. In 2012, median income at $19,000 a year was less than half of what it was citywide. But Oliva says the area is rich with Latino history. In the 1970s, the now famous saying, "Si se puede," was coined just a few blocks from here during Cesar Chavez's fast for farm worker rights.
We have been waiting and learning and preparing for this moment. This community wants to support something.
That something could be up to 800 new apartments and townhouses, a third of them set aside for low-income residents. There's room on the empty land right under a flight path for another 300,000 square feet or so of commercial and retail space.
Let me ask you, so if we have a century or more of failure to do this, what in the world makes you think
what's different?
You can do
this? What's different this time?
The answer, Vera says, is timing. From Las Vegas to Detroit, American inner cities are revitalizing.
On the macro level, nationally, obviously we're going through this period of intense urbanization.
At a community meeting to discuss the project, residents Vanjie Muller and Nanette Parra fantasized about this urbanization.
Dream big.
Dream big would be to have
a grocery store.
But urbanization may just be another word for gentrification. Parra says developers put this neighborhood at risk.
They cater to those that are more educated, that are able to speak up, that are everything that our neighborhood isn't, that's what they cater to, and that's what we don't want.
So even though a grocery store and much more may be needed, residents worry the neighborhood's past as a Mexican-American working-class stronghold will be whitewashed, like it often is in Arizona.
There's really not an embracing of the Mexican-American culture. It's more the cowboy stuff, you know, the old West stuff.
Earl Wilcox owns El Portal Mexican restaurant just across from the tidy little park this neighborhood is named after. His family is well-connected politically, and he's used that clout to complain that the wrong development will threaten small businesses like his. Wilcox says competition from a big chain could wipe him out.
That's the fear.
And spoil the atmosphere of the entire place.
If they just come in historically and traditionally the way they do things, build it, and, you know, we'll worry about all these other things later, then there's going to be a lot of problems.
But if the developer recognizes Grant Park's Latino culture,
and it could be something really beautiful.
In Phoenix, I'm Peter O'Dowd.
Southern New Mexicans are caught in a debate over preserving a stretch of borderland as a national monument. The state's two senators and a congressman are pushing separate bills that set different boundaries for the monument. One of the issues at stake is border security. From our Fronteras desk, Monica Ortiz Uribe reports.
The land stretching south from Interstate 10 outside Las Cruces, New Mexico, is a desolate expanse of desert that from a distance looks unremarkable. But those who know the land also know its hidden treasures.
It seems every time we come, we find either a new petroglyph or a new ceramic type or a cool new arrowhead.
Angel Peña is an enthusiastic graduate student who's writing his master's thesis on ancient pottery typical of this region. On a recent afternoon, he prances on a mini rock mountain known as Providence Cone. It's littered with chiseled images of lizards, snakes, and four-legged fish. This was the site of a settlement dating back some 1,400 years.
In the morning, right when the sun isn't directly over it, but there's light out here, these petroglyphs shine like they're brand new.
This site is within the boundaries of a proposed national monument that would be called Organ Mountains Desert Peaks. It would include four separate chunks of land within Doña Ana County that together total 500,000 acres. Part of the land reaches down to the Mexican border. The details are outlined in a bill co-sponsored by Senators Tom Udall and Martin Heinrich. Here's Senator Heinrich.
You have these incredible landscapes and mountains that have some really important wildlife habitat, as well as a cultural tapestry, a story of who we are as a country.
The most identifiable landmark is the craggy Organ Mountain Range, which towers above the city of Las Cruces like the pipes of its namesake instrument. West of those mountains, across the Rio Grande River, are sections of land that travel across time. There are volcanic craters and ancient animal tracks. There are battle scars from Apache raids and World War II aerial target sites.
We have this incredible history of conservation. We have 68,000 New Mexico jobs that are directly tied to public land.
But those jobs mean little to local rancher Dudley Williams. He lives within the proposed monument boundaries north of the border, where he leases federal land for his cattle. When he first moved to New Mexico, he was blunt with his real estate agent.
I said, I don't want any rivers, I don't want any trees, and I don't want any scenic boulders. I want cattle grazing land.
Over the years, William says he's seen evidence of illegal smuggling on his land, including bundles of drugs. He fears a national monument designation would attract more illicit traffic.
I don't go out of the house without a pistol, even to go over to feed the horses or walk the dog.
Even so, recent Border Patrol statistics show southern New Mexico has among the lowest apprehension rates. But that's of no comfort to local law enforcement. They fear national monument status may reduce their access to the area. Captain Mannion Long is with the Doña Ana Sheriff's Department.
The types of crimes that we've seen were homicide victims to stolen vehicles, narcotic smuggling, human smuggling, weapons smuggling. Our concern is that if we're not allowed to provide that basic type of patrol, then these instances will become much more frequent.
As written, the Senate bill specifically states law enforcement will have access inside the monument, even within designated wilderness areas. But the sheriff remains wary of those promises. His department supports an alternative bill filed by New Mexico Congressman Steve Pierce, which excludes borderlands from the proposed monument. At a local coffee shop, engineer David Soles sips his favorite brew. He supports including the borderlands in the monument proposal. He says it's where hunters will find the best game and where hikers will find the most history.
When I joined the Boy Scouts, the first camping that I did was in these areas. Now I'll do some stargazing and we can take a telescope and maybe see the moons of Jupiter, the rings of Saturn.
Soles says the beauty and character of the Southwest is inextricably tied to these wide open spaces. In Las Cruces, I'm Monica Ortiz Uribe.
That's a wrap for Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KNAU Flagstaff, KRWG Las Cruces, KNPR Las Vegas, KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KUAZ Tucson, KXWT West Texas Public Radio, KRTS Marfa, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. For the latest headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our main handle is at Fronteras Desk. You may also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. This theme music is by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.